So today, as we begin this conversation, I am going to ask the following from you and from myself. When sharing an experience, please use I statements. And please remember that no question is a stupid question. We are here to learn and grow together. Please know that being uncomfortable is okay. It's never easy to look within ourselves for answers and that aren't always easy to find. It's okay to say, I don't know. And most importantly, we do value our whole community and not just those who agree with us. So with that, today's topic is about the history of race. And the first question I'll pose as we begin is, why do some believe teaching about the history of America and its relationship to race is anti-American? I love doing root cause analysis. From my speech and debate classes in high school to some of my corporate experience and project management, I look for what's at the core of an issue I'm discussing or the problem I'm trying to solve. As I've been doing a lot of research on the history of race, I'd like to share and discuss with you what I've discovered as I look to find new truths by dismantling some of the lies we've been told. I recently watched a video on the origin of race in the USA, produced by PBS. It first notes that race was not always considered a biological or genetic category. I've done some research before about race just being, or the color of my skin just being skin deep, but it's hard to remember that sometimes when we've been forced to believe generalizations about what the color of my skin means. The video on PBS then discusses the earliest definitions of race before it was used to define genetics and physical appearance. So what was the first definition of race? Originally, it was used to describe kinship or a group affiliation. In the 16th century, it was used not to describe physical traits or behavior, but it was meant to describe people who were all members of the same household, group, or shared a common ancestor, or also familial kinship. In the colonial era, there was a shift in the idea of race in the 17th and 18th century. They attributed this to the rise of global capitalism backed by slavery and colonialism in a period known as the Enlightenment period. This is where pseudoscience, which is the collection of beliefs or practices mistakenly regarded as being based on scientific methods, were introduced based on physical appearance, the behavior, and legal rights of people of color. So it looks like we have a caller on the line. Graham, would you like to help me connect?
Yeah, I believe Joanne is with us. Joanne, are you there?
Yeah, I am there. Let me just shut my radio off. I was just listening to Lanisha. Oh, hold on a second here. Yeah. Okay, I'm here.
Lanisha, are you hearing Joanne?
Hi, Lanisha. Hi. I just wanted to call in this morning kind of relating to something that you and I discussed in email, in Messenger, about the things that you're saying about the things that I have learned recently and things that I've learned from you about what it is really like to be a person of color in this country. And I just wanted to convey my grief, you know, my feeling of being appalled at how I could not have known this. And I know that that's kind of a first world problem, you know, but it is a real thing. And I think that people that you're talking to who are aware are going to be feeling these things too. And just, you know, my grief and my wanting to sort of apologize to you as a person of color for what you are going through and have gone through. And it's just, I mean, things that, how could I have missed some of these things I consider myself to be a fairly aware person. But my God, you know, the things that you're talking about are very real. And so I think as you talk to people here in our KMUN community, who I think are pretty, we have our eyes open as much as we can. We're still missing so much. And I just wanted to say that. I think admitting your ignorance is the first step to becoming aware. And so
thank you, Joanne.
That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you. And I will just respond to you by saying, you know, I think that where the place that we're in, we should all collectively be grieved by what's happened to all of us. And sure, specifically because of the color of my skin, that may dictate some systems that have been put in place of oppression. But I really believe that systemic racism has affected us all, and more so negatively than even the positive impact of supremacy for some. We have all, we've all been lied to. We've all been forced to believe into a system that doesn't want us really to recognize the truth, because if we did, maybe we wouldn't fight as much. And so it's really important to keep engaging, and not just engaging in these conversations, but as we discover the truth right now, I'm even learning how to dismantle some of the lies.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think some of what we're seeing right now is, in our country right now, is just people's attachment to old ways that just kind of have to go, you know?
Yeah, and especially when we think about the evolution of race and how it sought to prove a natural order, you know, and then it started providing these social constructs for us to believe in.
Well, and I guess see this as a time of learning, you know. It's learning and awareness and opening your eyes for me.
Yes.
You know?
A lot of learning and unlearning, hopefully, that will go on simultaneously.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to call in and say that because I'm so with you, and I just want you to know that. And I think there are probably a lot of people in our audience who feel that way also. So,
thank you. I appreciate you for calling in this morning.
Sure. Thanks for doing the show.
Thank you.
Okay.
So to that order, if anyone else would like to call in and talk about what have you been learning about race lately? What have you, if you are a person of color, I really don't even like to use that term, but right now I really don't even know what term to use, because we have forced ourselves to have to even use labels that we might not even appreciate using to describe ourselves, but yet we find ourselves, or I find myself, I will say, using it to describe people, even though I don't like it when it's used to describe me. And so what has been your experience of growth right now and evolution in learning new truths, unlearning some things that you might have believed to be true that you are no longer discovering are true? I know for me, over the last couple of months, as I've been doing a lot of reading and engaging, I have become extremely angry at the lies that I've been forced to believe about the color of my skin, the generalizations, the false definitions, the biology, the insecurities, the fear, and the position. I'm learning a lot of lies right now that have been produced as truths. And I'm giving myself the space to be vulnerable, to sit with even how I'm unpacking what being considered a Black person, a Negro, a person of color, a colored person, an African American. What does that mean to me personally? Because we laugh in my family, if anyone had called my grandmother an African American, she would have said some not too nice things to you. My grandmother did not like that term, African American. I'm learning that I don't care for the phrase BIPOC or the term BIPOC. I didn't even know what that was until this summer. And I kept having people refer to me as that. And I finally went, what is that? And after reading that, the definition is Black and Indigenous people of color, I was like, okay, so that's just another box to put me in. And anyone who knows me well knows that I don't like being put in boxes. And so how do we grow out of these boxes while really being able to acknowledge a new truth about who we see ourselves both individually and collectively? I want to take this time now to talk about a couple of theories that were used beginning in the 18th and 19th centuries to really force us in this box of race as a social construct. And if you know anything about this, I'd love to hear from you. If you don't know anything about this, I'd love to hear from you what you think as we talk about this on the air right now. So in 1866, Frederick Farrar lectured on the aptitude of races, which he divided into three groups. The savage group were considered all Africans, indigenous people, and people of color, with the exception of the Chinese. Semi-civilized were considered the Chinese population, who were once civilized, but now their society was in arrested development. And then there was the civilized group, who were considered the European, Aryan, and Semitic peoples. Let's look at this, the three categories, where over time, we've internalized this context, even though we don't consider ourselves racist. I definitely don't consider myself racist. I know that I have biases. And I wonder how some of the things I've been looking at now is how can I tie even my biases into these constructs that were taught, not to me personally, but to the generations before me, and how that translates into some of the systemic racism that we still live in the effects of. And even as we talk about race again, why is it considered anti-American to talk about our relationship to race? I'd love to hear from you. That number again is 503-325-0010. As we continue, I want to then talk about eugenics. Eugenics was an effort to breed better human beings by encouraging the reproduction of people with good genes and discouraging those with bad genes. It was a practice or advocacy of improving the human species by selectively mating people with specific desirable hereditary traits. It aims to reduce human suffering by breeding out diseases, disabilities, and so-called undesirable characteristics from the human population. And I read, you know, as I've been reading the history, and I love the website, I think it's history.com or history.org, I'm not sure which one, but as I'm doing a lot of educating right now, I don't have, you know, encyclopedias firsthand like we used to in the living room. I could just go open up an encyclopedia. I'm thankful for the internet in this instance, because it is easy to find information, and not just on Wikipedia or Britannica, but to really begin digging deeper and looking to see how some of these specific thought processes have related themselves to where we are now. We even think about social Darwinism and the belief of the survival of the fittest, that the idea that certain people became powerful in society because they were just innately better. Graham, yes, you got a question or a thought prop right there?
Well, you've triggered all kinds of thoughts for me this morning, Lanisha. And I kind of want to go to your question about teaching about our history and the idea that that would be un-American, right? Mm-hmm. Can you give me a little bit more of an example of what you mean? I have some ideas to share, but I would like to hear more about, you know, where where you've heard people say that it's un-American and who that's coming from.
I think, let's see, I hear it a lot of places outside of, let's see, my normal social, and I will say even within my normal social circles. And when I say I hear it saying, being said that it's un-American, it's like, it's not patriotic because it's, you know, it's our history and it's, we're so beyond that. And that's not who we are. We didn't, this generation have anything to do with that. So what's the point in still bringing it up? And it seems like there's this, the, this big pushback to actually have a conversation where we talk about our history. Because one, I think some of us don't want to acknowledge it. And this is just my perception. Some people don't want to acknowledge it. Some people have been taught that it's nothing to talk about, that it is something that's being blown out of proportion under this guise of being patriotic. It's not patriotic to talk about the history of slavery and certain things. And even in just some of, I think, how we are being educated and what we are being educated about, it is really distilled a divide between what we believe is right or wrong in our fabric.
So one of the anecdotes that came to mind, this isn't a question or an answer, but just an observation and an experience. I taught music at a nonprofit music center in Northeast Portland, which did, you know, the idea was in part to serve underserved communities with a music education. And many of those neighborhoods were predominantly Black historically, but sort of in the process of a gentrification movement at the time that I was there. And so there was an emphasis on hip hop, teaching hip hop classes. And there was a hip hop instructor who was one of my peers, one of my coworkers. And we were doing some sort of a training and we were going around and it was maybe an icebreaker or something. And the question was to talk about your culture. And when it got to the gentleman who was the hip hop instructor, and he was a Black fellow, he talked about how he didn't have a culture that he could point to, that there was a vacancy there. But not only that, he did go on to say that the closest thing that he had to a culture was hip hop. And that was where he found an identity to build his self-esteem on and to build his character on. And I was struck by the fact that he seemed like an angry person. And I wasn't in a place in my life where I think I could really understand where his anger came from. But I think I'm much closer to understanding that now. I think that one of the things that I would like to see in these conversations is more people wanting to know what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes. And so what would it be like to be a Black person who's pulled over by a police officer? What's the difference in that experience between being a white person and being a Black person? Because it is a very different experience. The things that go through your head, the concerns that you have, the potential outcomes are very different. And that is the kind of thing that should make us all angry.
Ram, I'll tell you, one of the things that makes me angry is the fact that I don't know my family history.
Right.
You know, we fail to remember, I fail, to remember, or actually I say, I want to not remember that my family history was taken away from me. It was not legal for Black people to be born in hospitals in this country and for records to be kept. And so, whereas I know, who my great grandparents were on my mom's side, both her mom and dad, I don't know much of their story outside of what was related to me by my grandparents and their siblings before they died. But really, you know, not knowing, I can't trace. And, you know, everybody says, well, you know, you come from Africa because your skin is brown. And if it wasn't for a DNA test I did a couple of years ago, I wouldn't even be able to trace that. Whereas white people, all, you know, my friends, they can always tell me where their family came from.
Right.
You know, what part of Europe or what part of wherever they know all, like they can trace 5, 6, 7 generations back and know their history, the roots of their existence. And that's one thing that's always troubled me is I will never know the root of my existence.
Well, and you have a right to be angry about that. The other piece about education that I was thinking about is in reflecting on my education, we read some books, we watched some movies, and they had an emphasis on slavery. And I'm trying to remember if there was a much of an emphasis on Black history that was positive or inspirational or, you know, that highlighted the incredible works of African Americans in the United States and world history. And does that paint the wrong picture, or does that reinforce a stereotype or reinforce a relationship because it's something that you're forced to look at over and over again? And I think slavery is kind of America's original sin. I think that's a good way of putting that. Never should have happened, but it did happen. And so you can't say that it didn't, but where is the balance between focusing on the dark past versus also looking for the inspirational past or that past where you can find some sense of history or some sense of culture? Do you have thoughts on that? And then we do have a caller that's ready to come on.
And just real quickly, I'll answer as I can. So there's a quote by David Roediger. I'm probably saying his name wrong, but he says the world got along without race for the overwhelming majority of its history. The U.S. has never been without it.
It's a good quote.
Yes. And as you're right, I'm learning, even as I'm learning and unlearning things right now, I'm trying to define again how I shift my own narrative. For instance, I am now calling myself a brown skinned girl rather than a Black girl. I've never understood why I've been called a Black girl. It's always bothered me, but yet it was a label put on me that I've had to live in. And I'm even personally trying to identify where can I help be a part of that change, where maybe we need to take less focus on the product of my skin. And like Dr. King said, the content of my character, because that's definitely more important. And that the generalizations that even I've learned based on being a brown skinned girl is not true based on science. So with that, let's see who's on the phone.
Uh-oh. Oh, looks like they got tired of waiting. I was too long winded. We invite you to call back 503-325-0010. You're listening to Rural Race Talks with your host, Lanisha Duke.
Yeah, and you, and Graham, let's look at even the construct of athleticism in this country, right? Especially with all of the social justice movements that we've seen most recently, because I won't say first in general, but first most recently with Colin Kaepernick, you know, and how that got divided and twisted and became all about nationalism. And even my husband and I, some of our early conversations in our relationship about Colin Kaepernick, the first question I asked was, when did you first find out about Colin Kaepernick? Was it when he first began taking a knee, or was it after he started being called a SOB? Because then that was very public. And so I asked him, when did Colin Kaepernick begin kneeling? And my husband really didn't have an answer, you know, because he thought it was very recent. And I don't know if most people know that Colin Kaepernick began kneeling while Barack Obama was still in office. And so he had been doing it for some time before it became a big deal. All right, Graham, it looks like we have a caller on.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out how to manage this. Can I hold on a minute while I turn the radio down?
Yep. Just listen on your phone.
Okay.
That's always the hard part.
Yeah, and if you're listening, we do operate on a short delay. And so when you call, you're going to hear the live version while you're on hold. But if you're listening on the radio, it's 6 seconds behind. So you want to make sure to listen on the phone when you call in.
Okay.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I am excited about this program, and I wanted to share something that I learned about recently, which is called the Doctrine of Discovery, and okay. Specifically, the researcher is Steve Newcomb, but it's kind of really opened my eyes to his thought that what he really thinks of it is now the doctrine of domination, and that, you know, he has documentation that goes back to like the 1300s, and how, you know, that the world has basically been, you know, kind of under system of domination, and it has really, you know, kind of helped me to open my eyes and see, you know, what we're dealing with.
So to clarify, the doctrine of discovery is sort of the context for colonialism, right?
Exactly. It was a document put out by the Catholic Church, the Pope, precisely, you know, stating that if you're not Christian around the world, that you can go and discover countries and dominate them. And if they don't turn Christian, which most indigenous and a lot of people, you know, didn't understand what they were trying to do, you know, they could take those countries over. And, you know, it has persisted and lived on, you know, ever since.
That's for sure. And it's very unfortunate to even start discovering how religion weaponized race as well, and how it was used. I have a question for you. Have you been able to identify, as you're learning about this, how to make some adjustments, not just in your own thought process, but in some of what you are doing to actively engage in being the change, if you are?
Well, yeah, at the moment, I've started a group, a dialogue group online, and we're getting ready for our second session. But yeah, we're trying to, you know, look at questions like, you know, people that have historically been in the category of privileged and, you know, really kind of are in that category, kind of how to see, you know, what is really happening as far as domination and, you know, all of that goes. But also for us who are in the oppressed category, one of the things they talked about was how to, I don't even know how to say this. It's like we've been imprinted with how many centuries now of this oppression, and we have a lot of that domination in us, and we need to address, you know, how to, before we even start trying to address it, we need to, you know, look at ourselves and how to, you know, kind of unimprint that domination, or, you know, I don't even know how to do it. I definitely, you know, seen some of it in myself. So it's just an inquiry, you know, at the moment about, you know, how to address it.
Most definitely. And I just wanted to know, where are you calling in from?
Central Oregon.
Central Oregon. Awesome. In case you have other neighbors in Central Oregon listening, would you like to invite people? Is this a group that you want to invite people to join, or is it like a private friend group? And it's okay either way.
Yeah, right now it's just a learning group. So once, you know, we kind of figure out how to do this, then, you know, it would be something then would become maybe more public.
Well, that'll be great. And please keep in touch with us here at the station and let us know, you know, how it's going, because I'm very interested to know how several conversations are happening right now, because there's so much to talk about, which is even some of the not problem, but some of what I see in trying to do a loaded radio show in an hour time slot once a month. It's like there's so much to talk about and it could be all over the map, but trying to stay focused and hopefully yet be able to still have a place to build from.
Yes.
So thank you very much for calling in.
Okay. Thank you.
One of the things I want to talk about is language. I've been thinking a lot about, again, what it means to me to be considered part of an underrepresented group or a marginalized group. And so I'm going to share with you some of the thought process I've been going through, specifically as it comes to some of the oppressive language, I think, that came out of some of that domination that we're talking about. But first, I wanted to listen to Miss Aretha Franklin. I know most of you may know this song being recorded by Sam Cooke, but Miss Aretha Franklin's version of "A Change Is Going to Come" stirs my heart in such a moving way. I wanted to share it with you today. So enjoy.
Something that touched my heart, and it began this way. Just like the river, I've been running ever since. He said it's been a long time coming, but I know my change is gonna come. Sky.
How many of you guys know a change is coming? Sometimes it's easier to see, but I can feel it. Miss Aretha felt it. Thank you again for listening to Rural Race Talks on Coast Radio 91.9 in Astoria, 89.5 in Tillamook. If you want to call in and talk to us, the number is 503-325-0010. I want to go back to a thought about some language that we use a lot. Marginalized is a word that I'm starting to hear a lot as it as we talk about undoing racism and uplifting voices. And I was in a meeting yesterday, and after the meeting, I opened my dictionary and said, okay, what does this word mean? And the word marginalized means to make or treat as insignificant. And I sat with that for a minute, and then I questioned why, if I am actively working on coming out of some of the stuff that I've been rooted in, to still consider myself as being insignificant. And the word marginalized has such a negative connotation. I wonder what would happen if we focused on empowering whole communities where everyone has equal and equitable access, accountability, and active participation. I think that even as we're doing a lot of discussions right now on anti-racism and systemic racism, uplifting voices of those who may be underrepresented, underserved, even the word tolerance, being tolerated. I don't want to be tolerated. I want to be accepted. And I challenge you, as I'm challenging myself right now, to think outside of the words being directed to us and really think about what that means. And it looks like we've got a caller on the line. So welcome in. Good morning.
Good morning. I just have a couple of comments. I'm David from Hammond. Anyway, I have always regarded everybody as being equal. I know that it sounds trite, and I know that I'm a product of my own experiences, but one thing that keeps hanging me up, I imagine being a white man of 77 years, every time I step outside on my porch, I have a certain expectation for the day. I get in my car, I can go do this, I can do that, I have a lot of freedom. What if I was a black man and I stepped out on my porch? I think things would be real different, and I would be considering a lot of other things. I would look across the street, I would look at the person walking along, I'd be concerned about my health. I think it would be different. That's one comment I would like to make. The other one is I believe that we need to move on. I do not think of the black and white issues all day long. I might spend 30 seconds or 1 minute or 3 minutes thinking about how my black brothers and sisters have problems in this world. I don't have time. I worry about my own health, my failing heart, my family. I come from a career of teaching language to people from all over the world. I found, and most of them were women. I found out that most of my students were very, very conscientious people. They wanted to get ahead. They were in my class because they wanted to learn English so they could succeed. They were hard workers. And I mean in general. Of course, out of thousands, you're going to have 2 or 5 or 10 that are wrong people, that are crooks, that are rapists or whatever bad thing you can think of. But most of them aren't. Most of them are fine people. And they're there because they want to be there and they want to succeed. I don't see color when I go out. Unfortunately, being retired, I have very, very little interaction with people from other countries, from people with different colored skin than myself, but I have respect for all of them. And I have all my own experiences. There was a man from the South when I was in the Marine Corps at 8 years old. At about 18 years old, and he sat across from me in a communications deal. He was from the South, and he used to call me white boy, and I used to call him black boy. And every time we would mouth those words, nobody else in the shack heard that stuff going on. We would both laugh hysterically. We meant no harm. He meant no harm to me. I meant no harm to him. But those were experiences. And at the same time, I do realize, I do hope that there is change. I do have a feeling that people with black skin have a lot of degradatory type things that happen to them. I think that they make less money. I think that they are mistreated from time to time. But I also believe that people, all of us, should move on. And I'm kind of glad to see some of the black people that I see in the national media now tend to move on. They don't dwell so much on these things. There's a few firebrands and activists that raise their heads when somebody gets shot. That is absolutely wrong. I'm glad to see that Portland has an oversight committee that was voted quite overwhelmingly to keep an eye on our police force. I have great respect for the police, but we have to make sure that the bad guys are weeded out. I have no other comments, but thank you for listening to my diatribe.
Thank you. Can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in many different places, mostly in Portland, but I also lived on the outskirts of Chicago and a few other places, and I traveled when I was a Marine. I was stationed in for 2 years in Puerto Rico, got to know the people down there. I had communist Puerto Ricans come after me a time or two, but they were totally atypical. I was defended during those times by the Puerto Ricans. I barely knew them, yet after the people verbally attacked me and left, the Puerto Ricans came up to me and said, if they laid a hand on you, we would have jumped them.
And one more thing, if you don't mind. So as you're talking about, you know, it's time to move on, I want to talk about that a little bit, because even my experience since I've moved to the coast, I first landed in Cannon Beach, uh-huh, Labor Day weekend in 2014, and I've been in Tillamook County since 2015. And it's really interesting because I hear what you just said a lot. You know, it's time to move on. Can we not talk about race? I don't see color, but yet at the same time, people, a lot of my experience with people, both locally and tourists in our communities, the first question when they see me is, how did you end up here? And I know that they're not asking me that because I have such a wonderful smile and such a beautiful laugh.
Well, and you should educate them is what my answer to that would be. Of course they're going to die. I'm not stupid. I do recognize difference. If somebody has two heads, I notice they have two heads. If somebody is black or brown, as you say, I notice that. Why shouldn't I ask that? If I'm 77 years old, why shouldn't you ask me questions related to my age, if I'm or white or anything else? I don't find that offensive. And I don't think that how did you end up here should be taken as offensive. I think I would look at that as a moment to educate. If you tell that person at that time, well, it is unusual for a black person to locate down here into a white community, but it looked like a nice community, and that's why I'm here. End of story. Stop worrying about it. And this, what my suggestion would be, and move on. And if the white person keeps persisting, he's the one or she is the one that has the problem, not you. You move on.
So thank you for your answer. And just to clarify, I never get offended when people ask me that question.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, good for you.
So I hope that is not what came across, but I was just pointing out that, you know, when I hear, like you just said, it's time to move on. And how do we stop talking about race? It's hard because people are always asking me to talk about race.
It's a very good point that you make. What it tends, again, to remind me of is a dog that I saw one time was hit by a car and broke its leg. It was running in a pack with other dogs. It turned around and looked at its leg and looked at the pack running on, and it took off and started running, dragging its leg behind, happy and barking. I don't know if it was happy. But the point is we all carry luggage. And we just need to move on and try to be sensitive to each other. And if things bother you, they bother me too. And if you're being mistreated, or a black person is being mistreated or something, that's not right. We should step forward and say, knock it off to the person that's doing the mistreating, and move on. That's
Thank
my
you.
Only comment, but thank you for allowing my long diatribe.
I appreciate you for calling in and for listening. Thank you so much. Oh, gosh. Again, there's so much to unpack, and I can't believe we've almost hit our hour. And so we've got 5 minutes left, and I want to leave you with a bit of encouragement. Over the last couple of days, I've been reading and rereading Dr. Maya Angelou's poem, Still I Rise. And so I recite that for you this morning. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you best beset with gloom? Because I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns, with the certainty of tides. Just like hopes springing high, still I rise. Did you want to see me broken? Bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries. Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awful hard, because I laugh like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your eyes. You may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise. Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide. Welling and swelling, I bear in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise, I rise, I rise. Once again, that was And Still I Rise by Dr. Maya Angelou. I want to thank you again for joining us this morning. Feel free to reach out to me on Facebook, by email. I appreciate you for taking the time to embark on this journey with me. If you will note, I will not always confront and disagree on publicly or anything, because sometimes as I'm learning, it is important to just hear what people have to say and listen without always needing to jump to a defense and respond. And so I just want to encourage you to keep listening to your own heart, and then keep listening to the heart of others. And so, Graham, do you have any final thoughts before we move to a song?
Just want to say what a great show it was today. Lanisha, thank you so much for being a part of KMUN and bringing your work to our listeners.
Thank you. And I want to say I have been having dance parties in my living room by myself. I listen to a lot of Pandora music, and every so often something will come on that moves me up out my seat, and I just dance by myself. And so I have a feeling some of y'all need to get up off the couch. If you're not driving, or if you are driving, just turn that volume up a little longer as we go out with some more Aretha Franklin with Rock Steady. This has been Lanisha Duke. I'll see you next month, and I love you all.